Are your ulcerative colitis symptoms proving difficult to manage? Tremfya guselkumab can help you manage the cycle of UC symptoms. At 1 year, many patients taking Tremfya achieved clinical remission, and some patients also achieved endoscopic remission. Individual results may vary. Tremfya is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderately to severely active ulcerative colitis. Serious allergic reactions and increased risk of infections may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and TB. Tell your doctor if you have an infection, flu-like symptoms, or if you need a vaccine. Ask your doctor if Tremfya can help you manage the cycle of UC symptoms. Call 1-800-526-7736 to learn more or visit TremfyaRadio.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Upgrade your business with Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. Shop Pay boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning fewer carts going abandoned and more sales going cha-ching. So if you're into growing your business, get a commerce platform that's ready to sell wherever your customers are. Visit Shopify.com to upgrade your selling today.
Welcome to Sunday. I'm Brian Kilmeade. This is One Nation. Great roster of guests, including Senator Tim Scott. Haven't talked to him in a while. Cannot wait to dig into what's next and what is it like being good friends with Donald Trump as well as working with him. Jamie Lissow on the media moments that matter most. And Tommy Lahren and Sid Rosenberg weigh in on many issues, including what's happening at Columbia and New York City and the pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas riots. But first to this, the theme of the week, the price paid for a Trump friendship. Now, in normal times, when you strike up a relationship with a powerful billionaire who's vying to become the most powerful politician in the world to run the best country, it would bring nothing but upside. But as it turns out, when it comes to Donald Trump, it often results in attacks from the blind side. I mean, the first target was the president himself. Remember, they tried to oust him from the White House once he won. That first time didn't work. Tried to arrest him. Didn't work. Tried to bankrupt him. Didn't work. Tried to run him, stop him from running a second time. Fail. Tried to stop him from getting the nomination by blitzing him in court. That didn't work.
You're going to have to go through hell. Worse than any nightmare that you ever dreamed. But in the end, I know you'll be the one standing.
And I did too. And of course, they tried to stop him from winning. Clearly, they came for the king. They came for the king and they didn't get him. But the story doesn't end there. But perhaps his most insidious is what happened next. His enemies have been going for his friends and his family. But first, they went after his 80-year-old CFO, twice, Alan Weisenberg, over minor tax indiscretions. His campaign manager, Paul Manafort, they put him in jail on unrelated charges, something he did in Eastern Europe. Worse, they went for his son, Don Jr. He had the lawyer up over the fictional Russia collusion investigation. And don't forget son-in-law Jared Kushner, working for free, facing jail time over completely above-board meetings with a Russian. Don't forget Trump's legal team. You got three of his lawyers left no choice but to flip on their famous client and become weapons of the prosecution. Celebrities, Tom Brady, for example, Tiger Woods, both criticized for calling Trump their friend. But who has paid the greatest price, perhaps, personally and professionally? Affecting millions of shareholders, employees, and his empire, Elon Musk.
They call it like Trump derangement syndrome. Yeah. And I don't, you know, you don't realize how real this is until, like, it's, you can't reason with people. If looks could kill, I would have been dead several times over.
For Trump, that never happened, right?
No. Doesn't it seem strange? Like, what is up with this total, like, madness?
I agree. It's madness. The world's richest guy. He's juggling Tesla, X, SpaceX, Starlink, and asked for and got the Department of Government Efficiency. It's not glamorous.
Somebody slap me and wake me the up because I'm ready to get on with it.
If you could speak directly to Elon Musk, what would you say?
Elon Musk.
Elon Musk and his hackers don't know.
To think that Elon Musk or Donald Trump give a about our public schools.
It's total.
But looking to rescue America from financial calamity is all he did. He's tackling our finances as a country. And now he's the new target of the left. So if they're not attacking him personally, they're going after his businesses now, actually calling him a Nazi, the man who was once revered by the left and the ultra left.
Elon Musk, a.k.a. real life Iron Man.
Elon Musk is doing things that may revolutionize
transportation and climate change.
Staggeringly rich and staggeringly intelligent.
A wonderful, out of this world, incredible images from the first all-civilian orbit around Earth. A huge win for Elon Musk.
As a leader in science and technology whose name may indeed belong alongside those of Edison and Jobs.
I think it still does. Teaming with Trump, though, has made him a target. It's gotten so bad, a grateful and outraged president turned the White House this past week and the lawn into a Tesla dealership, reminding Americans, you love this guy and you love the electric car.
Hello, President Trump. Are you looking to buy or lease today?
Well, I'm going to buy. And I'm going to buy because, number one, it's a great product. When you heard an American company, especially a company like this, supplies so many jobs that others are unable to do. When you do that, those people are going to go through a big problem when we catch them. And when somebody's a great patriot, they shouldn't be hurt. He's a great patriot.
Another Trump friend perhaps paying the steepest price, but Musk made it clear he's not quitting.
I'll stay as long as it's useful and not productive. And if I can help the country, I'll stay.
I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving!
And the crowd cheers at the White House and among the right. Joining us now to discuss it and put it in perspective, a good friend of the new president, Senator Tim Scott. Senator, as I'm playing that, I'm wondering what you're thinking, because you're also friends with President Trump. And a lot of people got mad at you, right?
Oh, Brian, you know that about it. I'll tell you what, without any question, I've had a lot of attacks in my life, and especially during the Trump years. People lose their minds. Here's why, though. The left are losing their mind, Brian, because they're losing their voters. Think about the fact that the radical left, they don't just weaponize the government. They come with violence after sound people, good people, public servants. Remember, Brian, that they ambushed cops, these radical left actually ambushed and killed cops. They went after Jewish students because they didn't like October the 7th. And now Elon, literally just in the last couple of days, we've seen a Molotov cocktail thrown at a charging station, Tesla charging station in my hometown of Charleston, South Carolina. The bonehead caught himself on fire. This is ridiculous. The outrage of the left is leading to political violence in a way we have not seen in the last 30 or 40 years. It's ridiculous.
And all he's doing,
stop.
And the thing is, Senator, he's not doing something to make SpaceX more valuable,
no.
To make Tesla more valuable. He's going into individual departments and he's using his business expertise to try to lean out the government. I saw Ray Dalio this week say, if we don't get a hold of our deficit, we have a calamity coming for the country. He's just trying to fix it.
Yeah, Brian, here's the truth. $36 trillion in debt. We're starting to see so much of our annual appropriation go to paying our debt that there's not going to be enough left over to fund our military or, frankly, support all those social programs people are worried about. You've got to make a decision. The average dollar is better off in your pocket, the taxpayers' pockets, than they are in the government. That's what he's saying. Let's take the dollar and let the American people keep it.
I know.
It's simple.
And just a side note, if you are looking to buy a car and you're thinking about an electric car, go get a Tesla, because he's been forced to pay such a price. I'm talking about the salesmen. I'm talking about the mechanics, the people that make these cars. Forget about Elon Musk for a second. You're making them collateral damage. Lastly, I just want to get your sense about how the left is handling the success that so far you and the Republicans have had, led by President Trump. I want you to hear Maxine Waters, what she accused you guys of fomenting. Watch this.
I'm worried that Trump is on the edge of creating a civil war. I believe he expects violence. I believe he expects confrontation. I believe he's working toward a civil war. We're not going to get goaded. We're not going to get tricked into that.
Senator, where does that come from?
Somewhere not on this planet. It's an alternate universe. President Trump attempting to return to the American people control of their lives, control of their resources. It has nothing to do with the Civil War. It has everything to do with this absolute alternate universe the Democrats find themselves in. Listen, Brian, remember the State of the Union. It was just a few days ago, so to speak. These are the same people who refused to applaud a 13-year-old brain cancer survivor when his dad held him up because he wanted to be a law enforcement officer. These are the same Democrats that held up signs that said false. When you saw the mother and the sister of Lake and Riley, they wouldn't even applaud. These are the same Democrats who frustratingly would not applaud for a Border Patrol agent who took on gunfire and then returned to save the lives of his own colleagues. These Democrats, these liberal elites, are trying to stir the pot because they want to see more violence. But the good news is, we the people stand behind Donald Trump because we want our resources back. We want our control back because we are the only people who can decide the future of ourselves. It is the ultimate American dream to determine your own journey. The Democrats believe government is God, and they want to determine your future for you. It is wrong.
I've never seen a group of people more angry over something that I don't even, I can't find the substance behind it. Senator Tim Scott, always great to talk to you. I know you're at the White House this week working on one big, beautiful bill. We'll see if some legislation will come down this spring. Senator Tim Scott, thank you.
We're praying for it. Thank you, buddy. Have a good day, Brian.
What a week. Pro-Hamas protesters intensified all week long following the ICE arrest of the pro-Palestinian Hamas activist Mahmoud Khalil. Students expressing their solidarity with Khalil and their support for Hamas. But a crackdown is finally coming under President Trump. Not only is the president pushing to deport foreign students who stage anti-Israeli protests, maybe some on a green card, he stripped Colombia of $400 million and more could be coming. All coming in grants, by the way, no longer. And now Colombia is planning to punish students who took over a building last year, including expulsions and suspensions. So joining me now to break this down is Fox News contributor, OutKick host Tommy Lahren. Tommy Lahren is fearless name of her show and WABC's finest morning show superstar, Sid Rosenberg. Great to see you guys.
Good to see you, too.
What were your thoughts? You were dead serious looking at those protests. What comes to your mind when you see this, Sid?
Well, I'm disgusted. I can't believe this is New York City, right? New York City, what Jewish people have to worry about going to school. And people like this piece of garbage, that's all he really is, this Mahmoud Khalil, a horrible person that he is. He's getting support from New York politicians. He's getting support from New York students, New York people. It's just really sad to see New York in this state now where people like Luigi Mangione and George Floyd and this guy Khalil all of a sudden become heroes in New York City. I never thought I'd see that day.
Dude, Tommy, Democrats are going to Khalil's side, not all of them, but they see Khalil as the victim here.
Well, again, they're on the wrong side of the political issue and the wrong side of history. But to your point, I hate to see New York City like this. It's a great American city. I would also say to a lot of these students who just want to go and get educated, come down to the South. Come to an SEC school. Not only are we fantastic in sports, you will not have to put up with this. You will not have your buildings being taken over by pro-Hamas supporters and terrorist sympathizers. Come to the South. And I'm reminded of the great Jason Aldean song, Try That in a Small Town. This would not happen where I'm from.
Who finances this, Sid?
The people that stormed Trump Tower, I should say, on Thursday, the people that stormed Trump Tower, they're a Jewish organization. People like George Soros are still out there, obviously spending a lot of money. But don't confuse the issue. It's not just paid agitators. There's a lot of people here that are just lost souls. They really are students. The people living in New York, they've got nowhere to go, nothing to do. People want a cause. This is their new cause. But yes, there are groups out there, people like George Soros, people like the Jewish Voices that paper these things. Because don't forget, at the Trump Tower, they all had matching T-shirts. All those red T-shirts last year when they were on the lawn at Columbia, they had their matching tents. You just don't put that together without a lot of money from a lot of different people.
So, Tommy, will the crackdown and the receding the grants, taking the grants back, will that wake these colleges up?
I think when the money goes dry, I think it's going to take a little while for it to hit them. And I think there's going to be a lot of resistance. And I think you're still going to see a lot of these young people, these students wanting something to rail against. But again, I think these universities, they need to be the first line of defense. If they crack down and these students are paying all this money to go to these schools, if they're not able to get away with this anymore, hey, listen, something's going
to
change.
I bring back to the point that the Israeli Times is reporting that the captors in those tunnels holding the hostages were bragging that they are supporting these American activists. So that tells you it is these are all connected. I want to change gears if we can. It wasn't too long ago when Donald Trump was the target of this Russian investigation. And these journalists every night and other channels especially would point out all these breaking news stories about Donald Trump and his colluding with Russia. Well, it turns out all to be a hoax. The Mueller report proved that. Other indications are how this all unfolded. But Trump's not stopping there. Now, take a look at these headlines. He is suing the Pulitzer Prize people for giving the awards to these journalists for investigating him on fake stories. Times, fake Americans, the fake Americans Russia created to influence the election. Unlikely source propelled Russian meddling in an inquiry. Russian dirt on Clinton. I love it, Donald Trump Jr. said. These are all stories that did not lead to collusion. And Trump is going after the people getting the awards.
And he should. Now, they were able to keep their awards. He tried that a couple of years ago, as you guys know. He wanted to get the awards back. That's not happening, like Reggie Bush with the Heisman. They get to keep their awards. But he should go after those awards, because the truth is, the story was a lie. There's a lot of stuff out there that Donald Trump, President Trump, is working on, which is terrific. You know, Nancy Mace, remember her sitting there with George Stephanopoulos. $15 million later, he called him a rapist three times. That's not true. You've got the nonsense.
He paid the price for that.
Right, the 60-minute interview with Kamala Harris. That's still going on right now. That's not true. I'd like to see the president take action. It's enough with the hoaxes and the lies.
Are you okay with this?
I'm 1,000% okay with this. It also reminds me of why President Trump has his mugshot framed, of course, outside of the Oval Office. He was reminding people, other people, you might be able to get away with this. And for so long, Republicans have just cowered and we've just turned the other cheek. And you can say anything about us, do anything right to us, and we'll just simply lay down because we're nice Republicans. Donald Trump says, no, 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 fight, 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 and win, win, win.
Real quick, last time, totally different topic. Let's talk about Disney. We know they're being politically correct. We know they got spanked by Governor DeSantis because of this. In a politically correct casserole, they are rolling out a Snow White version. We're using CGI for dwarfs or little people, and the prince doesn't really save Snow White. Your thoughts about, I'm going to start with Tommy. Tommy, your thoughts about this political correct rollout, which has cost so much money and a premiere they're so embarrassed by. They did it in a foreign country only to influencers.
It's not just the woke storyline. You could get away with maybe a woke storyline. People would still take their kids to see it because it's Snow White. But then you have a lead actress who also just from the beginning crapped on the very narrative of the original movie and everything about it. So not only is Rachel Zegler insufferable, but the woke narrative is also insufferable. Disney is going to have big losses after this. And maybe, just maybe, the losses hit them in the pocketbook. They'll start making pro-American, maybe pro-women, pro-men, right, pro-everybody movies and instead of this garbage.
Said you love Snow White.
I did love Snow White.
Not anymore.
I can't stand this lady. She's horrible. They don't even have the seven dwarves. Now they're like some of the magic people, and she didn't want the prince to save her. And don't forget this, too. When they hit 120 million hits, you know what she posted on the website? Free Palestine. So not only is she part of that woke culture and not allowing men to love women and getting rid of the seven dwarves, but she's also a Palestinian supporter. For me, she's garbage.
All right, Sid, thanks for not pulling any punches. Thanks so much, guys. Great to see you. And finish off Sunday strong, promise? All right, and have a great week. Still to come on this show, Bill Maher destroys woke Hollywood with a simple history lesson. Comedian Jamie Lissau is here to break down that and other media moments that matter. Plus, can you cut government waste and still be empathetic? The challenge Elon Musk is facing, and he's finding the balance. Or is he? Also, catch me on stage coming up this Saturday, 6 days from now, St. Louis, Missouri, along with Fox Nation in Dayton, Ohio, June 21st, History, Liberty, and Laughs. BrianKilmeade.com to get tickets so I can meet you in person. Don't move.
Hey, I got...
Welcome back. Time now for the media moments that really matter. This week, I gave my VCR and all the cords and an assignment and the TV guide to this guy, Jamie Lissau. Mm-hmm. And I said, Jamie, you watch everything there you can and tell me the three stories that matter most. First, thanks for doing it. It took a lot of time.
Absolutely. I have nothing else going on.
Right. At all.
Yeah.
But I saw you on Gutfeld. Besides that hour, pretty much that's it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You're engaged.
I am engaged.
And it's going well.
It's going great. Thank you
Fantastic.
For asking.
I cannot wait to be invited to the wedding. I'm sure it's inevitable. Nothing yet. I checked this morning. First off, can we talk about this?
Yeah.
Bill Maher is offering advice to out-of-touch Democrats. This is one of your choices. Actress Julianne Hough was roasted for a land acknowledgement to honor three Native American tribes at the Oscars. Bill Maher shut it all down with his history lesson.
Either give the land back or shut the I understand the desire to right the wrongs of the past, especially when you get to take the moral high ground and then build an 8,000-square-foot mansion on it. Please get over this idea that ancient people weren't just as full of shit, in fact, more full of shit than humans today. The Maori in pre-colonial times were like most indigenous people, quite warlike. Frequently fighting other tribes, with the winners enslaving the losers and even eating them.
Are we over political correctness when it comes to this? No disrespect to Native Americans? Enough.
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, I have a smart TV, so when the Oscars came on, my TV changed the channel. But I did hear about this, and it's all signaling, right? It's virtually signaling without doing anything. The only time I actually do my own land acknowledgement, every time I go to my ex-wife's house, they go, this house used to belong to Jamie Lissau.
Right. In Alaska,
mm-hmm.
Right?
In Alaska.
I know a lot about you. Mm-hmm. And how does your wife feel when you bring her into things that you have no business bringing her into?
Oh, she loves it when she doesn't hear about it.
But, fantastic.
Yeah.
But she watches the show. America does.
She does.
All right, can we move on to your number two selection?
Yes.
Yeah, Doge, derangement syndrome, is really real. Stooping to a new low, bringing fear and pessimism to the American public.
When you heard about tariffs coming, how did that impact your thoughts about buying a dress?
I definitely wanted to make sure that I bought a dress immediately.
Try to avoid the tariffs.
Yes.
Some of these workers monitored bear populations, and without them, there could be more encounters.
Here in Yosemite, with uncertainty mounting over staffing levels, officials have already put summer reservations on pause for several popular campgrounds, putting the park's peak summer travel season in potential jeopardy.
Why'd you pick this?
Have you been to Canada? It's like a whole other country.
It is
for
crazy.
Now. Can I tell you a really quick story?
Yeah.
I had a tariff situation. I tried to buy a sauna for my place in our place in Boise, Idaho. And they go, there might be these tariffs because these come from Canada. And I go, wow. And I go, what do you have that's American? He goes, we can come over. We can build one. Not kidding you, Brian. Same price. Better. I'm glad it was a good reminder. I think this is going to be the only thing that people have to do. And I'm going to tell you, Elon Musk, he's the smartest guy we have. Can't we just trust him? Anybody against this is part of the problem. I feel like Elon Musk, I just decided recently that whatever his beliefs are, that's what mine are.
Fantastic.
You know how sometimes he's like, we're going to shoot this rocket because I don't need the because.
It doesn't matter.
I trust
him. He's putting chips in brains. He's building tunnels to beat traffic. I never thought of that.
Yeah, he's a man. I was at a bookstore once and there was a book called The Benefits of Taking Fish Oils.
Right.
And it was a 456-page book. And I put it back. I go, you know what? I'll take them. I believe you. I'm sure it works. I'm sure there's a lot of good stuff in there.
Exactly.
Elon Musk is my fish oil book.
Now, you picked a third topic. I found this interesting that you're watching MSNBC. But you noticed that Lawrence O'Donnell is making a career move.
It's the best.
Day 52 of Trump, he is so exhausted. He is, I don't know, going on vacation. Watch.
This is day 52. I thought it was day 92. It turns out it's day 52, Rachel. And I'm exhausted at day 52. And so I'm going to take next week off. Just taking next week off. Then I can come back and go with you all the way to the 100 days.
We all tell each other you have to take care of yourself. You got to pace yourself. You got to be in this for the long haul.
What is your thought about that?
First of all, Rachel Maddow always looks like she just lost her glasses.
Absolutely. You just want to go find it.
It's very bizarre. You know what the problem is? The problem is the liberals are freaking out because they're like, the president's doing stuff.
Right.
What's going on? The president's doing stuff. And they can't handle it.
Right.
And this is not the kind of soft-hitting journalism we need. Like, remember, like, how many executive orders has Trump done? Do you remember Biden's?
Well, I think 90.
Like 90.
Yeah.
You know, Biden's first executive order, you remember what it was? It was cream of wheat. That was his executive order. And if you compare presidential addresses, they go to Biden. What do you think your presidential address is going to be? He goes, I don't know exactly, but I know it's a big White House. It's just a different time. Well, you got to keep up, man.
And by the way, you can't bail. If Jamie Lissau wanted to bail because he was exhausted, that means you don't eat because you're a stand-up comic. You get paid to perform.
You think I wanted to be here today?
No, absolutely
Brian?
Not.
But I'm here.
Yeah, you don't like me. You don't even like the show.
Is it not crazy, though, that this guy's like, I can't handle all this news.
Right.
Like, he's a news reporter.
It should be heaven for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Jamie's great to see you.
Great to see you.
And by the way, we don't have a relationship off camera. It's a shame.
We don't. We absolutely don't.
I think it's best.
Yeah. If I take my mic off, you stop talking to me.
Right. And what's your web address to find out where you're going to be?
Oh, my web address is, a lot of people don't know my name, so you can just go to greggutfeldtsfriend.com.
That's it. But we know Greg has no friends, so that's mislabeling. Still to come. Thanks, Jamie. I am taking you back to America's first anti-woke university, how the dream team behind the University of Austin managed to make it free for students.
Looking to take your brand national?
Welcome to Fox News Live. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer in New York. The death toll from this weekend's massive storm system continues to rise. This is cleanup begins in the wake of widespread damage. At least 37 people have been killed across seven states. That does include Missouri, Texas, and Kansas. Dozens of others are hurt and hundreds of thousands are still without power. Preliminary reports show nearly 700 storms have been reported since Friday. That does include more than 65 tornadoes. And President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin are expected to speak this week as the U.S. tries to broker a ceasefire in the Ukraine-Russia war. It will be their second known call since Mr. Trump got back into the White House. It comes as leaders of the European Union are set to meet in Belgium this week to discuss the war, among other topics. Last week, Ukraine agreed to a U.S. brokered ceasefire proposal, which Russia is still considering. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer, and I'm back to One Nation with Brian Kilmeade.
Anti-Semitism is running rampant across college campuses, especially this week, leaving students' freedom, their safety, and more fragile than ever before. But one new university has taken a different approach. And going back to the basics, the University of Austin, built from the ground up in a former department store, is committed to open debate and academic freedom. So what happens when a school challenges the status quo and refuses to let ideology dictate the classroom? In part two of our two-part series, we talk to the students about the fearless dream team behind this university and how those great minds managed to make it free to attend.
What attracted me is the opportunity to be on the ground floor of building a university that resisted any ideological invasion of the classroom.
I picked this school because, A, the tuition was free, and I come from a middle-class family, and just because I really enjoy having political conversations.
Sort of kind of startup vibes here. You feel like you're really building something because every week something's changing, you're pivoting. Maybe something doesn't work, or maybe you're building on it, and it's really exciting.
Over time, you saw students be less and less outspoken, and it was only kind of the far edges that were willing to take chances with their ideas.
How'd that affect the faculty?
It was harder to have these conversations because, just like the rest of our society, conversations were more polarized.
Michael Shires ditched his tenured post at Pepperdine to join the University of Austin, risking it all to fight for academic freedom in an era of ideological conformity.
You're so brave to answer the question.
You complain about them denying your rights, you're erasing your resistance, and whatever other buzzword you want, and then you turn right away and do the same thing to somebody else. The same thing.
When we say civil discourse, we're saying, listen, you as a person are worthy of respect. Your ideas are worthy of challenging. But I have to hear your ideas and I have to actively engage them in order to challenge them. And so it's about a respectful discourse where we debate the ideas with evidence instead of trying to shout each other down.
You can also give the opening point of view from your own opinion or whatever argument you want to make.
We spoke with several students about why they chose the intimacy of this university and what drew them to the brand new school located on the third floor of a former department store. Despite receiving no federal funding, the university managed to raise enough money to cover the full tuition for both the inaugural class and the next one. That means the first group of students get a tuition-free education along with a unique campus tradition. Weekly announcements delivered from a literal soapbox.
The soapbox. and the speakers. Tell me about the soapbox.
Every Tuesday, we do announcements, and obviously because we're such a small campus and we're very community-oriented, we will just have someone stand up on a soapbox. You can see them pop above the crowd, and they'll just run down a list of, here's a debate that's going on that you should come to. Here's a professor hosting an event outside of school hours that you can go to. It just updates you on everything around the campus.
Why did you pick this school?
Coming in here, where the faculty are asking you these tough questions and are encouraging us to ask one another and to explore these ideas and these topics outside of school time, I just didn't think I was going to get that at a different university.
For me, we're kind of like realized. I came in here like a little bit skeptical of like seminar style courses, but as I kind of met my classmates and my professors, I realized like everyone is excited about what they're doing.
When I saw Barry Weiss talk about the school, I was so excited. And then I looked on the website and the people involved were like my intellectual dream team. So it was like a dream come true.
Give me an idea. Who's involved?
Well, obviously Barry Weiss, Neil Ferguson. I saw like Richard Dawkins on the website. And then the fact that it combined a classical education and then pushing you to do something was what I've always dreamed of.
I will see you guys. Nobody's in a desk. Everyone's in a, you're in a rectangle, right? What's that like?
It's a lot of discussion. I think most of it is discussion. You have to come to class prepared. You have to read everything or else your time is just wasted because everyone's depending on you to bring your opinion and kind of explore ideas.
It holds you really accountable too, because I think at a big school, you know, where you have lectures of 500 people, I know a lot of friends who go to those lectures and they haven't read a single thing, and it's sort of the day before their final, they're cramming it all in. But here, you need it every single day, and when you have classes of about 15 people, I mean, you really can't get away with not reading.
And what do some of your peers tell you is happening on their campuses? Have you talked to them now that you're in your second semester?
Totally, yeah. Like, they say they're in a room, and they have an idea, and they feel like they literally can't say it, and that's such a horrible feeling. I know I felt that in high school, and being here is so different, and that it really does feel like any idea is not off-limits.
Jacob Howland, now Provost and Dean of Intellectual Foundations at the University of Austin, spent 32 years at the University of Tulsa, once a top 100 school, but as academia shifted, so did Tulsa, and not for the better.
What did you make of it? What's the process of how it works?
Gradually, I saw that there was this kind of ideological invasion. After Trump was elected in 2016, students received an email from the president saying, we know many of you are upset, we're offering counseling, you know.
But don't you think, Jake, it's also a problem that it's not just the University of Tulsa, it was the country. Something they say happened around 2000, that the intolerance of conservative thought or anything that wasn't left-wing was not tolerated.
I think a lot of Americans might say, well, the faculty are the problem, but really there's another problem, which is the administrators. For example, at Tulsa, both our president and our provost, neither of them had a PhD. They were sort of professional managerial types. And they were left-wing, and they were selecting students that would sort of fit that agenda.
The watershed moment, I think, for higher education was when those Ivy League presidents were called to Congress and had to defend the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel protests on their campuses.
Right. At a university, there's something called academic freedom, which is not only the freedom of professors to say what they think, right, and to express their opinions, even if they run afoul of, say, that university administration, but the freedom of students in the classroom to, without fear, share their own opinions and allow them to be subjected to examination. And the fact is that when Claudine Gay and the others were sort of defending these students who were essentially making education impossible by taking over school buildings, hitting cops, stopping students from going into the library, what they didn't understand is that that activity impedes academic freedom. The goal of a university is teaching and learning. Anything can be allowed that does not interfere with those core activities.
Tim Kaine, professor of economics and director of the Polaris Center at the University of Austin, leads the Polaris Project, named after the North Star, to guide students through college and beyond.
We're not just having students leave with a degree, they're leaving with a major project that's what their life goals might be. It's way bigger than a thesis. It may be writing a screenplay, it may be starting a tech company, but they build something all 4 years while they're here. I think it's important to focus on skills, not just learning and reflection.
A lot of people go, oh, is this some conservative college? Can you tell us about it? Is that the stereotype people say? And can you tell us about the reality?
You know, I think someone actually took like a verbal survey at the beginning of the year, and it really was more split 50-50 among the peer group. And I think like that really speaks, like, people are just willing to like challenge and mess with those ideas. So I really don't see it as conservative at all.
You obviously see, all of us see the hate comments. You know, we're real people, we're reading these things. This is just a conservative white male cosm of their ideas. And we're here to learn. We're not here to be, you know, a liberal student or a conservative student or an independent student. We're just here to be university students.
And a question. Is empathy a weakness? How to find a balance when forced to make tough decisions? Plus, where are the JFK assassination files? What is in them? And why haven't they been released? Author Brad Meltzer knows. He'll be joining us next. Don't move. A champagne supernova in the sky.
Kubota Orange Days.
We've got civilizational suicidal empathy going on. I think you should care about other people, but you need to have empathy for civilization as a whole and not commit to a civilizational suicide.
Also, don't let someone use your empathy against you.
The fundamental weakness of Western civilization is empathy. They're exploiting a bug in Western civilization, which is the empathy response. Empathy is good, but you need to think it through and not just be programmed like a robot.
Exactly. That moment between Elon Musk and Joe Rogan sending many in the media into spin mode, accusing Musk of lacking empathy. But is that what he was doing? He was tasked with making tough decisions, slashing government waste with Doge, the group that he really formed. But isn't it a valid point? How do we balance empathy for people and empathy for civilization as a whole? Deep thought, right? And I got the perfect guest for this. No one knows better than my next guest, author of this book called Make Magic, the book of inspiration you didn't know you needed. So, Brad, congratulations on the book. I watched the speech in Michigan that you wrote the book off of and the momentum behind it. But what are your thoughts about what Elon Musk was saying?
When it comes to what he said about empathy, like so many of us, Musk's greatest strength is his greatest weakness. He is that chainsaw he so proudly wields. But as my friend Sharon McMahon says, governments don't exist to maximize profits. Taking care of veterans is not efficient. Taking care of the elderly is not efficient. Taking care of widows and sick people, making national parks, it's not efficient. But it's right. These are our shared values.
Right. I think his point is this. I have empathy for an illegal immigrant community. I have empathy for a drug addict. So I'll give them clean needles. I'll have empathy for illegal immigrants because they're here, so I'll give them money. But at what cost? Bringing more illegal immigrants. At what cost? The denying of veterans benefits. At what cost? More drug addicts, and those drug addicts don't stop doing drugs. My heart's in the right place, but am I actually doing the right thing?
Right. You can weaponize empathy, but let's not forget, you can also weaponize cruelty. And I know what side I'd rather be on. You know, efficiency is a value, but it's not the most important value. The founding fathers designed our system to make it hard to make changes so that one person couldn't come in and suddenly say they're the king. It's inefficient by design. It's a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And taking care of those who need it will never be waste. Those are the things we should care about as a culture. You know, in Make Magic, it says cruelty and venom, harshly judging those we disagree with, it's become sport in our culture. But cruelty and venom aren't signs of strength. They're signs of weakness and petty insecurity. And what takes strength is showing empathy and showing kindness to people.
True. And would you also say, for example, I want to spend money I don't have to help people in need. But if the country doesn't exist because I spent money I didn't have, and it begins to go bankrupt and no longer be that bastion of freedom in our case, not theoretical, who am I helping?
No, and listen, no one wants the destruction of the country, of course, right? You're, of course, right about that. But I always go back to my favorite. One of my favorites is Teddy Roosevelt. And he said, this is a quote from him. He says, like all Americans, I love big things, big prairies, big forests, big factories. But we also have a responsibility for justice, of taking care of people and things that get taken advantage of. And if you lead with empathy, of course, that can be a step too far if it's taken advantage of. But if you lead with efficiency, to me, you can also be doing even more damage. You got to balance both.
Here is a little of the speech that led to the book that everybody's talking about a year ago. It was your son's graduation. You're asked to be the keynote speaker. Watch.
Cruelty and venom, harshly judging those we disagree with, it's become sport in our culture. But cruelty and venom on proof of strength, they're signs of weakness and petty insecurity. What takes strength is switching places and putting yourself in someone else's shoes.
And the crowd loved it. Your son liked it. That's the key, right?
The key is that my son liked it. And, you know, people started asking me for the copy of the speech. And I said, I've never had anyone ask me so much for that. As a perfect graduation present, as a perfect birthday present, we all need inspiration right now. Whatever our politics, right, we know that we all need some inspiration right now. And that's where Make Magic came from.
Gotcha. And, Brad, real quick, JFK investigation. You wrote a book similar to this. Are you curious? And what do you think the holdup is?
Yeah, listen, I'm on the board of the National Archives Foundation. Of course I want these files. What's remaining right now is the last 1% of files. And trust me, I'm counting down those days. It was 15 days from when they said it in January, from Trump said we're going to release them. And then you got 45 days for the different agencies to do it. What you're seeing right now, it's not anything nefarious. It's they got to go through them and say, okay, is what we're releasing going to show us how we did secret things? Is it going to show us who our sources were at the time? Is it going to reveal someone who was on our side? We don't want to reveal that we have that person. That's what you're seeing. What I fear, though, Brian, is whatever comes out, half the country is going to say, I knew they are lying to us. And the other half is going to say, see, it's nothing there. So no matter what is said, we're never going to believe it. It's just the state of the world we're in now. But trust me, I want to read those files more than anyone else.
And I'll trust your assessment and summary over anybody else's. Brad, congratulations on the book. Appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Up next, what to watch and what to look forward to this week. Don't move. All right, before we go, some of the bigger stories to look forward to this week. For example, St. Patrick's Day celebrations all across America, even at the White House. It'll be fun. On Tuesday, VP Vance will address American dynamism. That'll be a big summit for the American worker. That'll be the focus. Also, let's talk trees. The National Cherry Blossom Festival begins Thursday and runs through April 13th. There you go. And finally, the First Lady in action. She's announced a spring garden tour. It'll begin sometime in March. And of course, March Madness. They play basketball around this time and somehow squeeze in some studying, I think. Tuesday, it begins with the first four. See how that goes. That is it for us tonight. Quick note, in a matter of hours, I'll be on Fox and Friends wearing something different, freshly showered, same hairstyle. We'll have a great roster of guests from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern Time. After that, my radio show amongst my guests, Warren Siders, country music star, and Michael Goodwin, a deep thinker from the New York Post. And that is from 9 to noon, BrianKilmeadeShow.com, to listen just about anywhere. I have news for you. I only have one thing left to say, and it is my message each and every week. Stay within yourself, America. To the plane.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, exploring the life and crimes of five serial predators from across the United States. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.